Accession number 4824, reel number 1.
Accession number 4824, reel 1.
This is Mr. Edwards, Reel 1. Well, Mr. Edwards, you joined the Royal Air Force in 1922 and you went to Royal Air Force Uxbridge like everybody else. And after your recruit training, you were sent overseas straight away to Mesopotamia. Would you like to talk about that and how you got there and what it was like and what you were doing?
We went out on a private liner. I don't know the name of the liner today, but there was 60 of us on the boat. And we had a very nice time going over. Landed at Bombay. And then we went up by rail to Dulali. We was in Dulali for 6 weeks.
Dulali was in India, wasn't it?
Dulali, India, yeah. And we caught the train again from Dulali to Karachi, picked up another boat there and went to Basra. That's up through the Persian Gulf. Got off at Basra on the train to Baghdad. And we went straight to the tank regiment where we was attached until the main body come out. I think it was November. So it was the 1st of June we landed in Mesopotamia. And the main body came out in November.
That was to join an armoured car squadron?
That made up the number 6 armoured car company. We were the advance party and we were attached to the tank corps to get used to the armoureds before the main body came out.
This was a new thing, the armoured cars.
That was a new thing altogether, yes.
What were the cars like themselves?
They're Rolls armoureds, they were. And a lot of them was quite old, you know. And one of them belonged to the Duke of Westminster one time. And then the end of, or just before I was coming away, we had some new ones out from England, and they were quite good ones.
But those first ones were private motor cars, which had been converted, were they?
They were private motor cars. As far as I know, one of them belonged to the Duke of Westminster. We knew that. Yeah. We were told that.
And did they stand up to the desert all right?
Some of them did and some didn't. The wheels, they were wire wheels, and the spokes used to collapse on them. But then they had disc wheels, and they were not too bad after.
And what was the, you know, armament and crew of the armoured cars?
Well, it was steel-plated armoured, and they were 6 ton in weight, and 4 to the crew.
Four?
Four, yes, four. That was drivers, gunners, and signalers. But we were all had to be proficient in all three.
And the guns?
The gun, Vickers in the turret, and a Lewis, which we could clamp over the back doors.
So you had two gunners and...
Yes, and two gunners and two drivers. And that was what it was, first and second driver.
Yeah. And what was the sort of duty you were put on to with these? What were you doing with them?
General duties, and we used to go with a political officer around visiting the various villages, you know, that with us, and if there was any trouble, well, we were sent in to try to avoid a bit of trouble.
Did you ever go out with a political officer?
Pardon?
Did you ever go out with a political officer?
Yeah, we were with a political officer. he was an Englishman, but I didn't know his name. I never said who he was.
And you were just keeping the peace, were you?
We were keeping the peace.
And making maps and things like that?
They were making maps in them days because nobody had any maps, you see. It was 1922, known as Mesopotamia in those days.
And did you have any action out there?
No, we never had very much action. Oh, I'm sorry. We never had very much action, but the army had a force march from Baghdad to Kirkuk in Kurdistan, and we supplied them with all their food and everything.
And you were based
in... I know one regiment was the West Yorks, but I forget who the other one was.
You were based in Baghdad. That was the depot, was it?
We were based on the right bank of the Baghdad, right bank of the river.
And that's where you lived, and then you went out?
Yeah, and the RAF were over the other side, a place called Hanadi. And, well, we were doing quite a bit there. And another place we were stationed was at Kingaban and Kirkuk in an old Turkish barracks.
When you went out, did you stay out overnight? Or?
Oh, yes, we stayed overnight.
And slept in your armoured cars?
No, we slept on the deck.
In the desert?
In the desert itself. We used to take the armoured around in a circle, and it would be one man on patrol. We used to do an hour at a time, and we slept in our clothes, and that was that. Because it used to get very cold at night.
You just dug a
side we just little dug
hole?
We dug a little hole out for your hip to go into, and that was it. And you lay a ground sheet down, blanket, and then add the other two blankets on top.
And did you ever get disturbed at night by anything?
Hyenas or jackals.
You were able to deal with them. What about mosquitoes and
Mosquitoes, yeah, mosquitoes we had, and many a morning we'd wake up, find three or four scorpions in the blankets.
But with no damage done?
No damage done.
Did you have the Royal Air Force flying squadrons working with you at all then? Were they working with you above you or not?
They did while the troops was up to Sheikh Mahmud up in Kurdistan, up in the hills.
You had trouble in Kurdistan while you were
trouble
up there?
In Kurdistan while I was there, yes. And they gave a Kurdistan medal, but I didn't get a medal because we didn't get up so far. You had to be at Mosul. Well, we was 2 miles this side of Mosul, and they said we weren't entitled. Yet we were doing all the running.
How did you communicate in those days with the aircraft?
Well, we used to, with pop and panel.
Sorry, can we have that again? Pop?
Pop and panel.
What was that?
Well, it was a sheet we put on the ground with flaps with numbers. And these numbers were in a code which the officer commanding used to keep. It was a sort of enemy advancing or retire or whatever the case may be. It was different. And the aircraft above used to communicate with us with a bag with a lead weight in, throw a message down, and to pick it up again, we put two rifles in the ground with the bayonets and spread a rope across, tie the bandage thing on, and they would come down with a hook and hook it up.
And they used to manage this first time always?
Not always, no. And if you was hanging onto the rifle, which you had to do, you had to watch this thing coming down.
Sure. What other methods? You didn't have any Morse code or anything with them?
We had an Aldous lamp and semaphore flags.
And you were trained in all those methods?
We trained in all those methods. And the heliograph as well with some of them. If we got away up in the hills and with a mirror.
And you were on those duties until, well, in that place until 1923. You did a year there, is that correct?
Just over a year, yes. Yes.
And then when?
Then from there, we embarked at Basra for Palestine. But when we left Mesopotamia, there was a lot of cholera, so we had to go to Egypt and stay there for a fortnight in a concentration camp while they took all the medical tests and everything of everybody.
You left your armoured cars behind?
The armoured cars were left behind because there was men that took them over from us. Then we went to Sarafan in Palestine, which is up near Jaffa, and joined number 2 armoured car company.
Having originally been in number 6.
Having originally been in number 6 at Baghdad.
What was the commanding arrangement for the armoured cars? You were in a section of 4, I think you said.
Yeah, a section of 4, that's right.
And were you in command of an armoured car?
Well, I suppose I was, seeing I was a driver. But we had a flying officer in charge of the unit, and then we had the CO and a sergeant and a corporal. That was all that we complied with.
And the basic section was 4?
Yeah, and there were 30 men all told in the unit. There was only 30 of us all together.
How many cars in the...
Four cars.
4 cars in the squadron?
Yeah.
What sort of duties
four to the company. It was A company, B company and C company.
In the squadron?
In the squadron, yeah.
I see. So there were 12 cars?
There were 12 cars altogether.
And sections of 4?
Sections of 4, that's right.
And each section of 4 was commanded by?
By a flying officer.
By a flying officer?
Yeah.
I see. And the whole thing was commanded by?
By a squadron leader.
By a squadron leader. Got it. Well, we were at Sarafan, weren't we?
At Sarafan, yeah.
What sort of duties were you involved with there?
Well, it was general duties there. It wasn't a... We just went out on normal reconnaissance, but there was no action hardly there. We were mostly engaged in going to Jaffa, pick up the wages and bring them back.
Very important duty too. And but Sarafan didn't last for very long, did it? You then went on somewhere else.
We went. Our other A company was still at Sarafan, but we was B section, and we went to. They disbanded number 1 armored car company in Jerusalem, and we went over and took over from number 1.
In Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem.
I suppose that was rather attractive, wasn't it, going to Jerusalem after having been in Mesopotamia?
Oh, yes, it was quite attractive. And our camp was a wooden hut we had there, and we were stationed between Jerusalem and Bethlehem.
Did you join in any social activities there after?
Yes, I joined the Jerusalem Dramatic Society. And we used to put on Shakespeare plays and visit places. And we went to Haifa and Jaffa, a Tel Aviv rather.
And you travelled around doing that, did you?
We travelled around doing that, yes. Mm.
Any big actions whilst you were in Palestine at all?
Yes. We were called out, we went to Amman in Transjordan, and it was tribes that used to call the Wahhabis used to come up from Saudi Arabia and rob the farmers of the women and their corn. And we were sent out to dispense with them because they were warned before about it. And they took no notice, and we were sent out to sort them out.
And you did that effectively?
We done that. We killed about 500.
500?
Well, they estimated that.
Mm. What were they, tribesmen on
They were tribesmen on camels? They were tribesmen on camels. And they had rifles, but some of them looked like big blunderbusses.
And how did you give them a warning when you had to warn tribesmen?
Well, we didn't do that was done through the Arab Legion. They used to Pig Pasher was a man in charge of all that, and they used to do the mostly, and they'd send for us, and we'd go out and finish the job off.
Yes, I see. Can you tell me a bit more about the way the armoured cars were organised? You had to have fuel, refuel, and carry your blankets and all that sort of thing.
Well,
do you have a support column?
We had crossleaf tenders with Leyland radiators for extra cooling. They used to carry water, petrol, ammunition, and any food that we had. So we had two tenders with us.
Always with you, whenever
always,
you went.
Always out. With us, wherever they went. And there was a bit of an action. They used to clear off and leave us to it.
And did you ever break down in your Rolls Royces?
We had a big end go one time on one, where we dropped the sump, took the piston out, and come home on five. And then another time I had a half shaft go when we was on our way to Baghdad, and that meant stripping the axle everything down, because the half shafts on the rolls were, they had a star wheel on the end, and they had to be stripped right down, everything.
Which you had fitters.
We had
fitters on the cross lids, I suppose.
Well, we carried a couple of spares, such as those, because they've had half shafts going before, but very rare we had any trouble with the armoureds. They were overhauled when we come back. If they'd done, we used to do perhaps on the average about 30,000. In about 6 months.
Did you?
And they decided to send them for overhaul, and they used to go down to Egypt for overhaul, and then it would take us perhaps a couple of months to set the carburetors up again.
Apart from that big action with the 500 casualties, were there any other unusual actions or activities which stick in your memory now?
We were... During the Ramadan, we always went down to Jaffa Gate. There was always one armoured down there, if not two. And we'd stand by for the 3 days of the Ramadan, day and night, to keep the Arabs away from the Jews.
That was the traditional time?
That was the traditional time.
And
they used to have a go at one another then. Because in those days, it was only Orthodox Jews out there. That used to visit the Wailing Wall.
Any, not actions, but any other excursions which stick in your mind when you look back, which are unusual?
Oh, I don't think so. Not in that respect. But I never got to see... I was stationed in Jerusalem just over the 2 years, but I never went to the midnight mass at Bethlehem. I was in Osport one time, and the other time I was on guard, so I didn't get to the midnight mass at Bethlehem.
Do you ever get out into the desert on long trips? No, Baghdad, Beirut.
We went to. We took the CO and his wife across to Baghdad from Jerusalem one time. Took us 3 days to get across. That was the only time that we'd done any doings. And then Nain Transport started running the overland mail from Baghdad to Beirut, and we used to escort them from what we call D into Ziza, because during those times the wandering tribes used to shoot these cars up.
Where was Ziza?
Ziza was about 5 miles out of Amman. Ziza Plains, up in the Syrian desert, actually. That's where it is.
Mm. And they, Nairns ran a regular service.
Nairn ran the service there, yes.
And you provided them with protection, did you?
Protection, yes. Yeah, the Baghdad crowd used to come from Baghdad to us at D, and we'd pick it up from them, and we'd escort them as far as Ziza. And sometimes we went right into Mafraq, into Syria.
Did you get involved in any rescues or searches or anything like that in the desert?
Well, if we had an aircraft down, we'd go out and stand by it and salvage what we could of it and burn the rest. While I was in Jerusalem, Lord Samuel car came up, and I was asked to drive it to go down to Jericho, or the other side, just the other side of Allenby Bridge in Jericho, where there were woods and wild boar, and used to spend a week there pig sticking.
Well, living conditions were obviously pretty primitive. How did you look after your health in those days?
Well, they used to give us quinine of an evening, but that didn't seem to do a lot of it, because I contracted malaria and sandfly fever, and I got sent down by armoured down to King Aban, which is where the aerodrome was, and put on a stretcher, strapped on the wing, and flew to Baghdad, a distance of about 300 miles.
You were actually strapped onto the wing.
I was actually strapped onto the wing of the aircraft. It was only a two-seater, a Bristol fighter in them days, and strapped onto the wing of the aircraft, right up tight to the fuselage.
Was that pretty breezy?
It was very breezy. And I remember having a balaclava helmet on and about 5 or 6 blankets and strapped well into this student, and they strapped it on the wing as well, and I flew down. Of course, you would fly about 90 miles an hour in them days, so it wasn't all that much.
And did you have to refill aircraft in the desert or anything like that?
Yeah, we used to. When the RAF started coming through with Vernons and Vimys, doing the airmail from Baghdad to Cairo, we used to fill them up at Ziza. And if they were late arriving or it was dark, we'd dig a trench in the shape of a letter L, it's all according to which way the wind was blowing, and they would come into the L. We'd pour petrol into the trench and set fire to it as soon as we heard the aircraft coming. And they'd land, they'd stay overnight, because they couldn't take off, because they couldn't get the height to go over the Jebel Hills, which is on the Mafraq border.
Well, that probably brings us to the end of your time in the armoured cars companies. But then you stayed out in Palestine and joined 14 Squadron, is that correct?
Well, we finished in Jerusalem. They shut the camp down, and the armoureds came back to Ramleh. And I left the squadron then and went with 14 Squadron, because I only had about 6 months to do for me time, and they decided to put me in transport, or I asked to go in transport, seeing that I didn't want to go out no more. And we had T-Fords in them days, and I took a T-Ford from Jerusalem to Oman, and right through Jericho, which was pretty hot in them days, and I used more water and petrol getting there. And I brought it, Leyland back on rail. You couldn't bring it down through the passes, down through. That was a narrow gauge railway, run from Amman down to Haifa, through Syria, and then transferred at Haifa onto the standard gauge to come to Serafan.
And you were a huck starter driver?
I was a huck starter driver.
I'd like to hear a bit about that.
Yeah, well, the huck starter was a T-Ford converted with an overhead gear driven by a chain and operated from the prop shaft. There was a sliding gear on the prop shaft, bring it back for the road wheels and put it forward for the overhead gear. The overhead gear had a platform, used to get up on the platform, insert the overhead gear into the propeller and go back and start up. And it would automatically, it had a spring on it. That was, in them days, it was elastic. Sort of on the same principle as what they used, the motorcyclists used today, you know, on their carriers. That principle, that was the one that used to pull it off of the aircraft.
And that was the only way of starting...
That was the only way of starting the DH-9s. And our room was all open, and the Arabs used to bring their cattle on the drum for the little bit of grass that there was there. And many a time I've had to chase it, hear the aircraft in the air, chase the sheep off with the ox starter and throw a smoke bomb out and then get back on post.
And those huck starter duties brought you to the end of your time overseas. What happened after that?
I came home, I had 3 months leave, and then I was posted to Henlow. What at Henlow, they started parachute jumping, but the first, they done it from Vickers Vimy, from the bomb racks, pulled it off with a Bowden cable, and then there was one man volunteered to try it. I don't know the man's name offhand, but he climbed out on the wing and pulled the ripcord and got pulled off the wing, and he was the first man to do a jump.
And the bomb rack releases were dummies, were they?
The bomb rack, yes, they were dummies, yes.
And you had to go around and pick them out of the ground, did you?
Sometimes the harness would break on the dummies and go in the ground, and I had to go down and put a tow rope around and pull them out of the ground.
And that brought you to the end of six very interesting, varied years in the RAF. Were they happy ones?
Yes, they were very happy ones. Very happy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edwards.